The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth.
Hey, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Show. I'm John Walker from Cordasco Financial Network. Today, we're going to jump into a topic that is really relevant and something that we've been impressed with at CFN, with the people that we help, in this unexpected speed with which people have adopted new technology, that the COVID-19 pandemic has had a massive impact on technology itself, but just how quickly we have adopted this change, how it has changed how we do business, how it has changed how we at CFN deliver for the people that we help, how maybe for you, it has changed how you interact with your family, how you do work yourself, how you educate your children, how you shop, how you get the things that you need. It's been amazing how quickly people have adapted, where maybe they were resistant in the past. We have people that we've been helping for years that would want to come into the city and meet with us and see us and work with us face to face that now say, yeah, FaceTime me. Hey, let's do it over video conference. Let's work in a different way. I am now comfortable with this where I wasn't before. And so this pandemic has been a catalyst to an accelerated change. And it has impacted so many different aspects of our life. And so today we're going to jump into some of those changes that we have seen. And we're going to talk about what does it look like in this new post-pandemic world. Joining me today is Jason Perlow, the senior technology editor at ZDNet, which is a business and technology news and information website that has a focus on hot topics like this and emerging trends and technologies. Jason's also the editorial director at the Linux Foundation, which is an organization that's supported by leading technology companies and developers from across the globe. Early in his career, he has a little background like we do. He worked on various trading shops on Wall Street, including JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs and others you've probably heard of. Jason, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you here because certainly this is a topic that is really in the news and certainly on many of our listeners' minds, right? We have seen the impact that the COVID-19 pandemic has had on all the technology around us. We've got some of our folks that we help that are in their 80s adopting technologies that never would have crossed their mind, FaceTiming their kids, working over video conference with us, just to name a few little examples. But there's so many other things that the pandemic has moved us forward from a technology standpoint at an unprecedented speed from what I can see between how we work, the medical field, how teachers are interacting with children, how we shop, so many other things. So thrilled to have you come in and give your perspective on this, share your expertise on this. What's the technology world thinking is going to be the impact?
A lot of the developments in technology, at least in the past 40 years, have happened as a result of an accelerant or a reason to adopt that technology, because people don't like the change if they don't have to. So as far as working from home, I worked from home for the last 15 years. I was a computer engineer, a computer in systems integrator by profession, right? And most of it was employed from home unless we had to travel. So I was happy with a home office, but now what you're seeing is this massive change of people working from home because of COVID-19. And what businesses are discovering is when people thought that it wasn't going to work, that there were going to be challenges, that it was going to disrupt productivity. And what they've now learned is, well, actually, no, it doesn't. There's a lot of stuff that can be done from home. People can do a lot of different types of work from home unless it's direct customer touch, which is becoming less and less popular now because of COVID-19. So there's a lot of things that can be done from home. And because of that, it's required the deployment of things like fiber optic technology. We've had video conferencing technologies for over 10, 15 years. The point is that no one has decided to really use them on a day-to-day basis until it was absolutely necessary, which is now. So sometimes, you know, things get adopted because they have to be adopted, because there's a compelling reason why you need to use them.
One of the things you said there I think that's so important is the term accelerant. I think your world, the technology world, the advancements have been there, right? The technology has been there. The readiness has been there. There's been a reticence on the part of people and businesses to adopt this, right? But now it's like the resistance basically evaporated overnight. And it's amazing because it's not just that people have adopted technology. As you said, they've been forced into it. In many cases, a lot of folks don't want to go back to the way things were. They don't want to go back into a closed-in office space. They like the ability. And many of the people that we help are now much more comfortable with, hey, you know what? I don't need to come into the city and meet you in your office. I'm happy to just video conference you and see your face. And I'll stay in my living room because it's easier for me. It's more comfortable. I can still interact with you and engage with you in a way I'm happy with. There's less of a friction. There's not as much inconvenience.
Right. They don't have to drive an hour and a half in traffic each way to get to work, and you're losing all that productivity at the same time, right? So there's definite advantages to working from home. Now, of course, there's some disadvantages, right? Which is I don't get to have lunch with my colleagues. I don't get to have that cooler talk. I don't get to go out for happy hour with them at the end of the day. We have to kind of replace some of those things with new office bonding exercises.
Yeah, like the Zoom happy hour, right? The integration of the team. We do that ourselves. We start every day and end every day with a video conference meeting so that the team can share what's been going on, talk about cases we're working on, provide feedback from the people that we've talked to so that we're all on the same page. And we can sort of still keep that camaraderie, that sharing of ideas, but it does present new challenges. A lot of our business owners, right, have had to very quickly adopt change. And whether they wanted to or not, to sustain their businesses. It seems like many of them were equipped for it, but many of them were not. And providers have very quickly been able to jump in and fill some of those needs for them. Can you speak to that a little bit of how this has maybe changed what business owners need to do on a go-forward basis?
Well, it's changed, you know, both B2B and also B2C relationships significantly, right? So let's take a look at something as simple as financial transactions, money. Right, just paying for stuff. It used to be, from a retail perspective, customer comes into the store, picks up a package, walks up to the front terminal where the employee is, and does a transaction. Now, he may do it with cash, handing over greenbacks, or handing over his plastic card. And there was touch involved. You're touching somebody to hand over a card. You're touching a terminal, potentially, to start a transaction of some type. There's a certain workflow that occurs to do a financial transaction in the olden days, right? Nobody wants to do that anymore. You don't want to have to physically hand over cash. That's an anathema. Or hand over your credit card and then worrying about sterilizing it afterwards, or touching your hands on a terminal to start a transaction. You want to be able to have the most touchless interaction as possible. In an ideal world, walk into a store, there's a package waiting for you, and you walk out of the store. And there are technologies that will allow you to do that. For example, RFID, or radio frequency identifier. You drive your car. There are toll systems in place where you can literally drive through that toll and without even stopping at 65 miles an hour, and the money is collected. So that same technology can be applied in retail. Amazon has certain prototype stores. They have in a few states. I think they have one in New York City, and I think they have a couple in Seattle. But you can literally walk into a Amazon-branded brick-and-mortar store. You walk into the store. You physically pick up the item that you want, and you walk out of the store. You never talk to a person. That store is able to understand from your smartphone what your member ID is, and it knows what items you picked up as you walked out of the store, and then it decrements your account as needed. Now, of course, that's a technology that would be Star Trek level stuff if every retailer did it. Now, there are other ways, of course, of doing touchless transactions. There are also e-wallets that are built into your smartphones and your smartwatches, right? We've had e-wallets for a good 5+ years. It's just people were not accustomed to loading their credit cards into these e-wallets. And, oh, I don't trust it because maybe my credit card number can get stolen, blah, blah, blah. There's always a litany of excuses why people don't want to change to do something. But this virus has now made it essentially much more preferable to work with an electronic wallet than it is, you know, a physical one. With these electronic wallet systems that use this technology called near-field computing, or NFC, and it's also built into some of the credit cards as well. If you look at your credit card and if you see a little symbol that looks like a Wi-Fi symbol, well, that's near-field computing. You can pass that credit card over the reader without physically touching it, and it'll decrement your credit card. Well, you can do that on your cell phone and also on your watch by programming your credit card into that wallet. And those are completely secure transactions. In fact, if you look at the systems that was developed for Apple Card is a virtual credit card that Apple issued in August of last year. They issue a physical credit card made out of titanium, but mostly it's designed to be used with the cell phone or the watch. And if someone should steal your credit card number, the phone can reissue that credit card number immediately. In fact, the physical card that they give you is not even printed with a credit card number on it. They use a very special system to encrypt transactions end-to-end that Goldman Sachs designed with Apple, and it's effectively infallible. So it's actually more secure than using a physical credit card in many cases.
There might be a fundamental change in the way we consume goods, right? You know, whether it's the Amazons or the Walmarts of the world, the big box retailers coming up with ways that you really have completely touchless transactions. There's been talk of that moving into the food industry, right? And what that might look like. And the sad reality of that is it's going to be probably much more challenging for the smaller providers to compete from a technology standpoint and keep up with the demands of consumers. There's also the reality that a lot of the big spaces that we use, retail, right, that has already been challenged, the malls and the movie theaters and all that stuff, they may not be coming back in the way that we expect, or certainly to the degree that we have them today. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. And I think those are more long-term changes that we're going to see, right? I mean, there's going to be short-term changes to try to jury-rig or enable businesses with the technology they need to survive, right? And there may be players that come in, to, you know, B2B type enabling companies like Square or, you know, Venmo, these larger organizations or these larger consortiums like Zelle, right? Which is have bank-to-bank consumer-to-business transactions facilitated. But then as you start thinking about things like retail space, large amounts of retail space, we have all these strip malls and shopping malls, which, quite frankly, as you say, a lot of people may not want to go back into. So what do we do with all this retail space? Do we raise it and create new ways of selling and distributing goods? It's possible that, you know, especially if you think about things like restaurants. The mom-and-pop restaurants may not be long for this world. It's estimated between 40 and 80% of restaurants may close within the next 6 months to a year because of the economic implications of this pandemic. So what we might see instead of mom-and-pop restaurants is highly capitalized businesses that buy these large commercial-grade kitchens in which you have potentially these mom and pops that will move into these tenancies in these large kitchens where it may be shared by, say, 100 different restaurant businesses. And you'll have a centralized distribution and delivery mechanism. You might have your Chinese restaurant, your Italian restaurant, your Indian restaurant, your sushi restaurant, your pizza restaurant, all operating under the same roof. Now, there may be five different virtual businesses, but they might have to share the same infrastructure and then have that all delivered and ordered by things like cell phones, like on things like Uber Eats, or maybe some other application will come out. Maybe Amazon will really dive into this, or Apple, or who knows. You're also going to see, I think, the retail space is optimized for quick pickup and not for long-term types of parking type of things, but facilitated for curbside pickup and go type of situations where you don't want the consumers walking into those stores and interacting with each other. You'll have a depot of some sort, whether it's for food or durable goods. I see the larger players like the IKEAs of the world or the Targets and the Walmarts, Costco's, big box stores being able to do those sorts of things.
You know, I think what you're also indicating is that if you're a business owner today, you're going to really have to be flexible and ambidextrous almost, right? You have to survive right now and keep business afloat, but also have your eye to the future of how things are going to look different, what technology is going to impact your business, what your consumers, your clients, your customers are going to want from you going forward. If you own a landscaping business or if you're a contractor, maybe your business hasn't fundamentally changed in the delivery of what you do. You still got to go in and paint a house or repair a kitchen or cut somebody's lawn. But the way you get paid may look very different, and your engagement and interaction with your clients may look very different. But if you're a retailer, if you provide a different type of good, or if you provide a service like we do in our industry, things may look a little different, right? If you're in the trust business, and if you're in the advisory and guidance business, your business model may look a little different going forward to survive what the new normal looks like. Folks are actually getting on board with it fairly quickly that may have been resistant to it in the past. Even in the medical space, my kids did their eye exams with their eye doctor remotely through a video conference, and he had the chart and the whole thing, and my one kid held the phone and the other one read the numbers off there. It was amazing. And now they're getting updated scripts for their glasses. And it was so impressive to watch. And I got to talk to the physician afterwards, and I was like, that was unbelievable. And he's like, yeah, we came up with that pretty quickly. We had to adapt current state, can't bring your kids into the office, but we need to make sure that they're getting care. It's amazing to me how quickly folks have adjusted. It's convenient, it's cost effective, and the technology exists to do it in a safe way.
I think we're just in the early stages, right? I think everyone's in a reaction mode. The amount of retooling that's going to happen with your average small business is going to be significant. There's going to be retooling costs to be able to deal with this post-COVID-19 way of transacting, right? I think right now is there's just been a lot of adaptation, and it's really a hack what these businesses are trying to do in order to stay alive.
There's going to be adaptations, and right now it's just stay alive, right? Let's get through the worst of this until we can figure out what post-COVID-19 world is going to look like. I'm curious, though. One of the things that I think people have raised concerns over, and I'm sure you can give some thoughts on this, is there's two things I've heard raised as fears. One is we've kind of quickly given up these concerns about privacy to really like the logistics of safety and social distancing have pushed people's concerns about all of these major tech companies having so much access to their information, or what you shared, loading my credit card onto my phone so they don't have to touch anything, but what if it gets hacked? So all of these privacy concerns and security concerns seem to have been pretty quickly pushed away once people realized that there was a way to do this because they needed to so that they could stay healthy. Do you think that that continues, or do you think that there's a reversion to now that I feel a little more comfortable with my health or my safety, I'm really concerned about Amazon having all of my information all the time?
So I think, you know, there's going to be a definite trend towards more awareness about information security from the consumer perspective. And I think that the retailers that are able to be operationalized around security and to add more security features are going to be the ones that are going to do extremely well. So like I said, I mentioned Apple Card. Apple Card is a little bit different than the way a regular credit card works. They had this special organization that they've built with Goldman Sachs that basically makes it impossible for the credit card strip to be read and lifted. So there's much that can be done in the banking space, there's much that can be done in the financial transaction space, in the business-to-business space, in the consumer-to-business transaction space. I think that this is the new normal. Once it's learned that there are recourses for dealing with fraud and things like that, and these technologies may make fraud much more difficult as we're dealing with straight end-to-end communications between banks, when you have less of a middleman, I think there's going to be less of a chance for there to be fraud, especially if you think of stuff like Zelle. I mean, how do you fraud Zelle if it's Chase Manhattan talking to a credit union? They're basically directly connected to each other. Those things are not going over the public internet when those transactions occur. When you remove the middleman and humans out of the equation, I think it actually, in a lot of situations, is going to make it safer. It's just the question is, you're only as good as your weakest link. I think, you know, there may be less credit card fraud if we deal with direct financial transactions, because there's no one to copy a credit card number because you can't see it. So I think there will be enabling technologies that will improve the experience. And then people will say, well, why the hell did we ever do it this way in the beginning with, right? I think I'm probably still walking around with the same $100 in cash that I did 6 months ago. I don't even want to pull that out of my wallet.
Right. No need for it anymore, right? But the second question is that I think is a concern, and I can understand it, is do we have the bandwidth? Do we have the infrastructure to handle this? Because there's been, I think, a lag in upgrading some of our infrastructure when it comes to some of this technology. Is the country set up to handle this, to take the volume? I know locally here there was a lot of concern. Would the Wi-Fi hold up to all of these transactions, all of these people online at the same time trying to do this type of work? What's that going to look like going forward? Can the country handle this?
I think that as far as our basic network infrastructure, if we talk about the AT&Ts and the Verizons and such of the world that own the information superhighway, the plumbing, so to speak, the plumbing is intact. We have plenty of plumbing as far as large commercial bandwidth. The cloud providers is basically what kept us going through this COVID-19 crisis. If there wasn't a cloud transformation by companies like Amazon Web Services and Microsoft Azure, Oracle Cloud, IBM Cloud, et cetera, none of these things would work. If this had happened 20 years ago, we would have been in big trouble, because we would have been dependent on private data center capabilities. And the fact that the modernization at these large cloud providers is they upgrade their equipment every 6 months to a year. So as far as the infrastructure, yes, that's fine. What we need to be concerned about is things what we call the edge network. So that is what we call the last mile or so of connectivity from someone like an AT&T to your home. So in my case, I have a fiber optic cable that comes directly into my house. I'm one of the growing numbers of communities that has access to direct fiber to the house infrastructure. And there are better ways of now of installing that in different residential communities and in suburbia. They have better ways of getting it in there without doing it too invasively. But the problem is that you look at these services like Netflix, where you're sucking in a lot of bandwidth to watch a movie. That's where I think, you know, when people at home at night and they're overloading those networks, that can be problematic. So what you're seeing now is a build out of what they call the edge, is where they're installing these computer systems closer to the home. So you'd have a couple of facilities in your town, which would have all those movies and content stored there so that you don't have to go across the entire internet 1,500 miles away to get to that data that you're streaming that movie for. So build out of the what we call the edge network or cache networks is what's going to be, I think, essential in the next 3, 4, 5 years going forward as people move towards the home and they start consuming more and more of these movies, start using more and more of these streaming type services and things like that. It's the bandwidth intensive stuff, I think, is where some residences and some businesses are at a disadvantage. But I think that the telecom providers will really look to shore up at least the next 18 months.
We have to trust that the one thing that obviously has been a hallmark of our country for a long time is the ability for businesses to get innovative, move forward, and lead. And so confident that there's enough people working on this that they'll come up with the right solutions. But things may look very different. Before I let you go, I want to get some final thoughts, but I also want your thoughts on this idea that this 9-to-5 business days might look very different. That may go the way of the dodo too, that flexible working days, people coming and going in different times, that businesses may need to be fluid and 24/7, and some people might have off time during the day and work later in the evening, and that whole balance of family and work may look very different going forward.
Yeah, like I said, I've worked from home for 15 years. So my work-life balance has always been based on whatever company I worked for, whether it was a Microsoft or an IBM or as a personal consultant on Wall Street. It's always been measurement by key performance indicators, not necessarily what time you show up to the office. I think that performance evaluations now have to be based on, does the work get done? Not when it gets done. In the technology industry, a lot of us are already used to that to begin with. And there are teams that are spread apart the United States. I have, you know, many colleagues that work in San Francisco, but I also have many colleagues that work in the East Coast and also in Europe and in Asia. We're a geographically distributed organization. I think that now as skills are brought on from different parts of the country, different parts of the world, I think that what we call that 9-to-5 workday is really going to be a very different thing for a lot of us.
If you're working with a colleague that's in Europe, your meeting might be at a different, you know, it may not be at 9 a.m. East Coast time, right? It's going to be when it needs to be, where you can get your calendar synced, and that might fundamentally change what your day looks like. And you may be taking a 3-hour break in the middle of the afternoon because that's what makes sense, right? And so that might be the family time. That might be when you're getting your exercise in. It looks like for you, it just may look very different than it does in the traditional sense of commute to your office, work your 9-to-5, come home and get your downtime. It may not look like that again in this post-COVID world.
Yep.
Jason, before I let you go, any final thoughts for our listeners on what is your world thinking about? What's on the cusp for us that we may not know is coming? Or what final thoughts can you share of the effect that the pandemic has had on all the technology that's around us?
If I knew it was coming, I'd probably be a much wealthier man than I am today. disruption often, like I said, creates opportunity. I think right now we're not focused on the opportunity. We're focused on the self-preservation aspect of what this thing has caused. But I think that we have to recognize that this is a disruptive time, that there's going to be, unfortunately, business failure. I think there's a guarantee there's going to be a business failure, but there's also going to be business growth. So things like virtual stores, logistics. I think logistics is going to be one of the biggest fields right now in terms of being able to coordinate delivery and appointments and all those types of things, the transportation of goods. That's all going to be huge in the next 3, 4, 5 years as people more adapt to this model. But again, I don't think we should despair. We should look up. I think that there probably will be a cure for this virus in terms of there being a vaccine. But there's always going to be viruses. There's always going to be disruptions of different types. We just have to learn to be more agile. And I think that if anything is going to come out of this is that businesses will now learn that nothing is guaranteed and that agility is going to be an important aspect of, you know, the way that they operate going forward.
On that very hopeful note, like a phoenix from the ashes, we'll get through this and businesses will survive. They'll adapt. And the country has already shown, the consumer has already shown its willingness to adapt and change. So a lot of hope for what things could look like going forward. Jason Perlow, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure.
There is no doubt that the COVID-19 pandemic has had a massive impact on the technology around us. It has changed the way we work, the way we interact at home, the way we shop, the way we spend time with our families. It has been a catalyst to unbelievably accelerated change. And our team is living through it with you. We have experienced the same disruption that you have. We can share the lessons we've learned. So if you're struggling to work through this on your own, or if you're working with an advisor who hasn't adapted, who hasn't faced these changes and isn't delivering a differentiated experience for you today, we have and we are at CFN and we can help. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com, or call our office anytime at 215-558-3500. Thanks again for listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth show. I'm John Walker. Stay safe and have a great week.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.